Recording in progress.
Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, whatever time of day it is you're listening to this live or on podcast. We'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. Again, we are here for all of your mental health, love, relationship, attachment, and community needs. For those that would like to participate in the show, if you have questions, comments, or suggestions, you can contact us at B2BPsych, that's B, the number 2B, P-S-Y-C-H, B2BPsych at gmail.com. Again, as always, we'd like to thank Marshall University as well as WMUL for allowing us this platform to talk about important and critical mental health issues. But any of the perspectives, questions, comments, or suggestions that you hear on this show are not represented or supported by Marshall University or WMUL, are not supported by any of their sponsors, affiliates, or supporters. But these are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself, Dr. Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. So as we always say, again, take this advice at your own risk. And while some of this may be therapeutic, Dr. Chapman likes to remind us of what, sir?
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, hello, folks. It's not therapy. It's important that you know that, because even though you have two psychologists on this broadcast, it's just important that you understand. We are given opinions, and some of our opinions will be backed by science, and others will be our own personal opinions. And this is not a formal therapy session in any way, and so you cannot sue us.
Yeah. Anymore. There you go. There you go. So how have you been doing, sir? How are things in sunny California?
Things are good, man. Can't complain. I hear it's a bit cold where you're at.
Yeah, yeah. It's a bit cool here. It's rainy. We should get some raining ice and a little bit of snow, but we will survive. So, all right, let's jump right into it. Again, today, all about manifestation, trauma and manifestation. Initially, we started with the idea of, hey, what is trauma? Now the question is, how does trauma manifest itself in our lives? And what are some of the different areas that trauma manifests itself in? Does it manifest itself in different ways, in different forms? And I don't know if we'll get to this today, but maybe later we'll talk about the notion or idea of how to identify your specific trauma response. Because again, we're here to explore how it may manifest. And most importantly, hopefully a little bit later, we'll get to you identifying your triggers, identifying how it manifests in your life and what to do from there. So again, as we said, it's a three-part series. So where should we start, Dr. Chapman? What do you think? What's on your mind?
Yeah, I guess we just kind of recap for the folks that listened last week just briefly, that we laid out a workable definition. And basically we said that trauma is, and we're separating trauma from just specific things that might lead to something like PTSD, but anything that could have alter who you are, either psychologically or physiologically in some way, short shape, form, or fashion. And if you didn't listen last week and you're listening this week, you might want to, you know, check it out at what is it, Podbeam?
Yeah, it's Mahogany. The site is mahoganyloveandlight.podbean.com. So that's mahoganyloveandlight.podbean.com.
Yeah. So that's where we're at. We laid out a definition that we're working with, that we agree with, and I mean, we explored a couple of other things, but now we're trying to think about what does it look like and how does it manifest. And for context, we're both speaking from a variety of things, a variety of pieces of who we are. You know, who we are as clinicians, who we are as educators. And then also the exposure that we've had to different research on the area.
Yeah. So I guess hopefully this will lead us into the manifestation. Is it always necessary to address trauma or significantly bad things that have happened in our life? Do you have an opinion on that? Like, is it necessary? Have you found it in your clinical work? Have you found it necessary for people to address those things? Are there situations that you didn't find it so necessary and there were others that you thought that they should?
I mean, I think it's a complicated question because I think when I approach that question, I think about the person who is sitting next to someone who they believe to be traumatized, and they're saying, he's about to give that answer that, yeah, you need to get some work. And that's what I've been saying. So I don't think it's always cut and dry and easy. I think in general, if it is something that has had a significant impact on who you are and what you do, then it's probably still having impacts on how you are in the world. And if you don't do something to work through it, then it's probably going to have side effects. That being said, there are sometimes the way that the behaviors that might come along with trauma might actually cause this person to be very successful. And there'll be no real connection to the trauma that has led to the amount of success this person has. And then also arguably, if they didn't have that trauma, maybe they wouldn't have it. So that might sound odd to people as they think about it, but not everybody's how it manifests and their behaviors and the things they do to cope and adapt are going to look the same. And every behavior has its own set of consequences.
Yeah. Is it necessary for us to make a distinction and separation between trauma and people's reaction and response to it? As I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about that. That your behavior, how you behave because you've been hurt or because you've been traumatized is, while it's connected to, it's separate, it's your reaction to the trauma. Like, is there a separation between those things?
I think that's also a good question, complicated. I know you're gonna just hear it's complicated a lot tonight, probably.
Yeah.
But we're talking about a whole level of idiosyncrasies, or trauma and the person are dynamic. So when the person has the trauma, you put 10 people together, 10 people are going to have different reactions. There might be some commonalities in like the base of their reaction, but there's going to be probably some very nuanced ways that it comes out with each person. And some of those things are going to be destructive towards other people. Some of those things are going to just be destructive towards that person. And for the person who does the behaviors that are destructive towards others, there's going to be this desire to make that person accountable for those behaviors because they're hurting other people. And I'm not saying that they should or shouldn't be accountable. I'm just saying it's hard to, there's so many nuances. It's like when we think about Marvel and the multiverse, and that's how I think about people in trauma. There's a multitude of ways it could go based on all these different variables with the person outside of the trauma. so there has to be acknowledgement of the trauma and then acknowledgement of what has been useful to some degree about what this person is doing. And then I think to separate them can be useful depending on what we want to use that information for. We want to use that information to point fingers at someone and say like, okay, so you've been traumatized, but that don't mean this is okay. And again, I'm not saying that certain behaviors are okay. I'm just saying it's complicated and you can't just necessarily start to say, well, okay, we can say the trauma is okay, but the behavior is not. That's kind of where my mind goes when I think about separating the two.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think to answer my own question, when I think about the importance of making those connections for people, and the question that I asked was, when people have had significant events that have happened in their lives that have emotionally, mentally, or psychologically affected them in some way, personally, I think it's important to make those connections for people. Just because, just so people, if anything, if it gives people the relief that I'm not crazy.
Right.
And again, you know, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way when I say crazy to those who are listening. I mean, that's how people respond. They feel like I'm reacting and responding in the world in a self-destructive way. Am I trying to tear? What am I trying to do? Am I crazy? Am I trying to tear my life apart? Am I trying to destroy? And making those connections, at least what I've found, is that helping people make those connections to something that happened to you, like patient zero. This is where it started and this is when it started. And your anxiety or your depression or your willingness to not want to be in a committed relationship or whatever might be a product of this thing that happened to you when you were younger. It's almost like I've seen people give this sigh of relief because all the people around me that I'm hurting have called me a monster. They said I'm unbearable. They've asked me what's wrong with me. They've asked me why I can't stop. I've wondered why I can't stop. I've wondered what's wrong with me. I thought I was losing my mind or I just didn't fit in this world. And knowing obviously doesn't fix it, but it's a starting point to know, at least I know where this comes from. And I'm not crazy. And I've actually had people say that to me before. Like, wow, this actually comes from somewhere. Not placing any value on whether it's right or whether it's wrong from an unbiased place. This stems from somewhere. And because this wasn't dealt with to some degree, it's manifested itself in your life in all these different ways.
Right.
So, and I know a lot of people that they don't share that perspective. Their perspective is, who cares when it started or why it started? Just stop it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and again, it's each his own, but I just find that helping people make those connections is valuable. Even it may not stop it, but at least it helping them make those connections, it brings some sort of comfort or some sort of rationale to who they are, which is so important. There is a rhyme or a reason to why I can't love or why I can't connect or why I'm promiscuous or I'm trying to protect myself. Or I'm trying not to get hurt again. Or I'm trying not to, because, you know, like those things matter. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that it's layered and nuanced because, as you're mentioning, I mean, once this is better than not knowing if it, well, I mean, I guess that depends because trauma is, you know, depending on how this person has lived their life. I've met people who how they have dealt with trauma, how it's manifest or how they cope with it is basically by avoiding it and repressing it and pushing it outside of their life. And the reason they do that is because obviously it brings up a lot of pain. Maybe not even pain they're consciously aware of, but then whenever it comes time to deal with it, it's like always, when I think about it when I'm doing this type of work, is that, okay, so it's probably gonna feel like one step forward and then multiple steps back, and then we're gonna continue doing that because it's painful, particularly if it's something that you put it on the shelf and you haven't dealt with it, even though it's been having an effect. I guess an analogy that comes to mind, it may not be the greatest analogy, is a lot of times we like to, when it comes to trauma, push it aside, and there's a reason to protect our sense of self. So it would be like your trauma is food. You put it in the refrigerator, you put it way in the back of the refrigerator and way back to the point that you don't even, you forget it's there. But then a few weeks later, a month, you start to open that refrigerator and something smells. And it starts to smell up the whole refrigerator. Eventually it might smell up the whole house. You smell it, but you can't see it. All you see is the effects of it. And the only way, it's going to be disgusting when you pick it out of that refrigerator and you got to clean the whole refrigerator out. It's not going to be good on your nose. Yeah. That's the only way, and except for in the case of trauma, it, when you take that thing out of the food, there'll still be lingering effects of it because it's changed who you are. Luckily, with food, we can just take it away, throw it away, and then hopefully that stank will go away. But
yeah,
it's a little bit different when we think about that. So I think there's that to think about. And then when what I've also noticed, a lot of my work is with couples, and it's not like I'm not saying it's given a ratio of how many couples I see, but I see this with everyday people too. So not just people I work with. When someone finds out that when it's not you, when you find out somebody else has a trauma, sometimes people, you know, people believe they're empathetic, but in some ways they're not. They say, and now I understand what's going on with you. And they weaponize that. They say, see, there goes your PTSD again, which it may or may not be the case, but it becomes this thing that now that it's known can be weaponized. Not in all cases, but definitely in some cases. And I think it's worth thinking about, particularly because people are consuming this information. You might not just be consuming it for yourself. You might be thinking about other people in your life. You should be very thoughtful about how you're approaching people in your life about this. This is not something that you want to just say. You may be thinking, I want to help someone, and the way to help them is just to remind them of how traumatized they are. That's probably not going to be helpful at all. Actually, someone who's been a victim of trauma really needs someone who could validate and understand them, even if what they do to you seems like it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good stuff. So, the different manifestations of trauma. And again, whenever we say trauma, I know there are people that are thinking World War III. It's like even now, as much as I know, as much as I've read, as much as we've discussed this, whenever I say the word, my mind always goes to an extreme. You know, so I can only imagine that, you know, those who may be listening, who may be listening for information and they haven't read some of this stuff or studied or as astute as you are, you know, and as I am trying to become in sort of studying this stuff now. Again, it's important that we remind you that it doesn't always have to be something extreme, just something significant that happens in our lives that can leave a mental, psychological, or emotional imprint on you in some way. So don't always think something is so extreme when you hear us say trauma, okay? Real quick, station identification. This is WMUL. 88.1 FM. This is Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Henson. Again, we're on continuing our series with trauma, and we're talking about the manifestations of trauma. How does trauma manifest itself in our lives? And we started talking about this idea of, is it necessary to address trauma? And as Dr. Chapman was saying, it's complicated. You know, it's truly, and a lot of this stuff we don't know, and it's so situational, and there are all these individual differences that come into play. But at least what we've seen is that if addressed the right way, and if the connections are made the right way, it can potentially be helpful. If at the very least, helping people understand the etiology and how they got where they are, okay? And along the way, not dealing with it. Again, we want to talk about what happens. We want to start the conversation of what happens when trauma isn't dealt with.
Right.
Are there physiological ramifications? What are the social ramifications in our friendships and relationships, depending upon what type of trauma it is?
Yeah. Yeah, and before we go into that, just with that question, the first question about should it be dealt with or not, I think the obvious Yes, it should be. And I think where I what I'm emphasizing is complicated because I want people to realize that there are nuances to what a person experiences and how it's actually affecting them in today's day and age, and how that coping mechanism they're using is affecting their life today, and what would happen if you take those coping mechanisms away. Let me just say all that. I'm not intending to say that a person shouldn't work through their trauma. I'm just saying there's lots to consider. So we think about how it manifests, and we're talking about socially and how it can affect other components of the relationships. I think there are some things that are obvious to people that, you know, that there's going to be an emotional reaction. And that emotional reaction can be in the moment of the trauma. Going back to what you said about, I think we'll clarify later, like the things that are actually trauma disorders as opposed to trauma. I think that's, there's confusion always there too. But different things can be traumatic or have an imprint. So in the moment of imprint, it's not like going to be like when you think about, maybe if people think about war, you think about a soldier, witnessing someone being killed or an IED or something like that. And then you think in that moment, there are going to be things that are associated, and that's where the trauma is, and they're going to have feelings. But also if it's something you cannot identify, because maybe it's not something as horrific as that, or something that seems horrific in your mind, you may have feelings that come out in other ways. You can't, if you're not aware enough, for example, say people have, 50% of the population, and as far as I know, if that's still true, 50% divorce rate. So there are some consequences of divorce rates that have to do with what goes on with the kid. And I'm not saying that every kid that comes from a divorce is gonna be traumatized, but it is possible that that early breakage of the home has some imprint on the child. And that imprint might come with feelings and emotions. So a child, you know, might have some sadness or some anger, or depending on the age, developmentally where they're at, they might believe that the breakup of the parents is really because of them. And I'm giving that example because even if they don't make that connection later on in life, they have those emotional reactions or residue of those emotional reactions, avoidance of emotions at all, or having difficulty regulating emotions. Like it's like they have an adult version of a temper tantrum when they get upset. They can't really stay in a good emotional state without losing their marbles over something. All these things could be residue of something that happened early, even if they hadn't. So one thing would be emotional reactions, and that, you know, that's the spectrum of sadness, anger, fear, irritability. And it doesn't have to just be when that, with that incident. It can happen years later, and residue of those coping behaviors can last for a long time. So that would be one area. It seems like you have something you want to say.
Yeah. Oh, I was when I was nodding, because I agree with you. And it's interesting. I like that term you said, like this, it's like this residue. It's like this soft imprint, and that's why I say I try to find words to describe what it is. It is like a residue, or like this soft imprint of something that's left behind that affects you. The way I think about, for me, there is an A, a B, and a C. A is the traumatic event that happened to you. C is the manifestation in your life, but there's something in the middle. And the thing in the middle before trauma manifests in your life is this. You know, I've said before that I believe that people are always trying to protect ourselves. Always. So I believe that when something happens to you, the step before your trauma manifests itself in, you know, avoidance of getting in relationships or anxiety or depression. What I think happens before that step is when something happens to any of us, there is a part of your mind, there's a part of your brain, there is a part of you that says, oh my God, this was horrible. What do I need to do so this won't happen again? That is the thought that I think if those negative experiences aren't sifted through properly, that idea will never leave you. When you've been hurt or you've been shamed to some extreme, you've been scared to some extreme, and it leaves to an extent that it leaves, as you said, this residue or this emotional imprint, I believe that what we say is, oh my God, how can I prevent this from happening again? So I love your example of the refrigerator. I open the refrigerator, like, I just won't open the refrigerator again. We'll go out to eat from now on. Now, when people come to your home and you go, you don't open your refrigerator? For what? And then I justify and say, for what? I got enough money to eat out every day. From the outside looking in, that looks extreme. To you, yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense to not open the refrigerator because there are bills in there. I don't want it to stink up my house again. So what I will do is I just won't open my refrigerator at all.
Right. And sometimes the house smells and you don't smell it.
Yeah. That. And that gets into something else. This idea. Put a pin in that because I think we need that. We definitely need to come back to that. It's like I heard, shout out and blessings to Baba Dick Gregory. Dick Gregory said the worst stench you could ever smell in a lifetime is a paper mill. He said, but the people that work at the paper mill, they don't smell it because they've been engulfed in it for so long. They just become immune to it. And it's only new workers that smell the stench. Mm-hmm. So this trauma has become your norm. And when people enter your life who are new, they go, what is, when they see it, they go, what's going on? Why won't you open your refrigerator? Why aren't you opening your, what is going on? And you got a reason for it. What do you mean you don't leave your house? Oh, it's too many people at Walmart. Well, I go at nighttime. I go at midnight. I go at 11 o'clock when the crowd is. Why are you going so late? Why do you park in the back of the parking lot? You know, like you've set up your life again. It's important that we realize we aren't trying to destroy ourselves. We aren't trying to self-destruct. But something has happened, and subconsciously we are always saying, wow, that was horrible. What do I need to do to protect myself from experiencing that again?
Yeah. I gotta just add a little thought to that. I think there are times when we're not trying to destroy ourselves. And then I think there are times when we might be, depending on the level of the trauma we experience. Oh. So that might not even be a conscious thought. I mean, because what comes to mind is the person who does things that can be self-destructive. You know, certain type of eating styles, certain types of behaviors that are likely to put you in situations of danger, but do them repeatedly over and over again. I do think sometimes there is this, I can't take this out on the aggressor, the person who traumatized me. It's not safe. So I got to take it out on myself. And or I just feel the identity that I've created about myself is so horrible because of the trauma that I experienced and I wasn't able to integrate that memory that my only conclusion is I'm a problem and I'm just not worth anything. And so I just do these patterns, even though they might not be obvious patterns, you know?
Yeah.
That are not helpful for the self.
Yeah. I was speaking to someone, and I said, you seem like a highly intelligent person. Do you choose your equals? Now, obviously, I asked the question because I knew the answer. And this person was like, no. Because that's what I deserve. Because I don't deserve, I don't know if I can attract, if I can catch, and I can keep a certain type of person. So I go after what I believe I deserve. And this low self-esteem and this low sense of who I am and what I deserve, you know, through a few sessions, we figured out came from some sort of trauma that happened when she was between 9 and 11 years old. But this is what I'm worth. And that was one of the words that was used, was this is what I'm worth. And this is what I deserve. So that was the motivation behind this self-destructive behavior. But that's interesting. I wonder if it's I'm trying to destroy my... That's a nuance I don't know if I thought about. Like, this actually just happened, but it's like, am I trying to destroy myself, or is it just what I deserve? And that's just the... And if I get destroyed from this behavior, so be it, I deserve to be destroyed.
Right. Well,
or is it active? Is it... For some people, do you think it's active? I am actively trying.
Right. Well, and I want to make sure it's clear to our listeners that I don't think can only be one or the other. I just wanted to throw in that sometimes that is. Sometimes the first thing you were saying is true too. Sometimes that's why it's so complicated. You know what I'm saying? I mean, people, you're listening, you want to get in this field, you'll have, you'll enjoy yourself in this field because you'll be able to respect the nuances of every person that you meet. There's a whole bunch of different variables. We're not, you know, lab rats, we're people and we have all these things. But in those situations where we're thinking about trauma and how it's manifest, all these different variables come into play. So you have some that might be going back to your original type of example where the coping was helpful or useful at some point, and it's not intended to be destructive, even though it is. So an example might be that this person is used to having to depend on themselves, and they do want to be in a relationship, let's just say for this example, but they get in a relationship and they can only be so vulnerable or only give so much of themselves to this other person. It's not even that they're selfish. They don't want to have to depend on this other person.
Yeah.
And that actually hurts them, but they're not intending to be self-destructive. And it's not even so much about, I mean, self-esteem could be involved, but what's more there than anything else is, this is how I survived when I was younger. I had parents that I couldn't depend on. I had siblings I couldn't depend on. I had whatever the case is. Maybe they came from some type of situation where there were no parents at all. I don't know what it is, but they survived using that skill. That particular skill didn't come from nowhere. It came from somewhere. I think that's your point. I agree with that part.
Yeah.
So people got to understand they could fit a lot of different places on the spectrum.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you like reiterating that point. It is so important because I think that people will listen to this and they will go back and listen to this again and again and again, listening for answers. Mm-hmm. And it's like all of our situations are so individualistic and situational specific. And maybe parts and pieces will work for you. Certain nuances will and certain ones won't, which is why it's so important to find, to go through sessions and find a therapist that clicks with you, that could, you know, do an intake and really pick and part, you know, pick those pieces apart for you, I think. But yeah, what I was saying was, I think in the middle, what mediates that, or as we say, what mediates that relationship, or what's in the middle between your trauma and what you do, is the thought, I believe that people are always trying to protect themselves. No matter what the outcome is, whatever you're doing has served you in some way. So, like I said before, I always ask my class, I ask, do you know anybody that's stingy? And everybody knows, yeah, I hate them. I can't stand them. Why not share? And I said, what I think about is, at one point in your life, who hurt you or took from you so much and so often? Or how scarce were resources in your life at one point that you felt like you couldn't share? So again, there is this outcome that we see that appears bad, or that appears unappealing. But does that stem from there was some trauma, and then in between, the thing that mediates it, or in the middle, there is this thought, because again, if we go back to CBT, cognitive behavior therapy, there's a thought that drives everything you feel, and everything you do, there's, you're thinking something. Maybe it's not, maybe you're not consciously aware of it because you're reacting so quickly, but there is a thought that drives it. And I wonder if when it comes to no matter what it is, if it's being aggressive, if it's fighting, if it's anxiety, is the thought, how do I protect myself from not experiencing whatever that trauma was that started all this in the first place?
Okay, I have a thought on that. I want to try to come back and remember my other thought about the CBT. But that's interesting. Like, if you use the Stenji example, and I think that's a good example to use for the sake of recognizing that we've been talking about trauma in childhood, but a traumatic event can happen at any point in your life that has an imprint on, you know, how you develop. So it could be that the example is, it's a couple, and one partner feels like the other partner, man, like this partner doesn't seem like they're sharing with me as much as I would like. And it might be more of an experience that they had in other relationship where they felt like, even though they consider themselves to be a giver, they feel like people have taken from them.
Yeah.
And they might not even actually really be stingy at all. This is deeper than just them being stingy, because they might not actually be stingy at all. It might be that once the dynamic in the relationship changes to the point where they don't feel like you're taking from them, then you would see that they weren't stingy at all. Thing is, sometimes we just put a label on somebody and that's it. Like, they're done. Like, that's how they are.
Yeah.
Particularly from your lens and vision. And that's the other part. But coming back to the cognitive behavior portion, right? I think the other thing to add to that is, like, depending on the level of the trauma, but for more intense traumas, trauma that's going to activate a fight or flight system, then I agree that the thoughts can definitely be there. I just want our viewers to think about, we were on emotions, but also how the physiological gets involved. So let's just say that the traumatic event is a young child watching domestic violence between their parents. And when they watch that happen, it activates that child's fight or flight system, their adrenaline, their all those biological components are going to be happening without thought, and they're going to be happening quick. And so, like, just like when you said, okay, well, the thought is, how can I protect myself? From a biological level, just like when a dog has been bitten or attacked at some point and they develop these fears, it's quicker than thought. It's, okay, the amygdala, okay, I'm going to think about these memories, the intense fear memory, and then it's going to consolidate that with the hippocampus. It's going to keep that in mind, and it's going to take all the cues that remind you of it. So as soon as there's any indicator of it in the future, so that little child that experienced domestic violence, when they're in another relationship, they happen to be with a culture that just speaks loud, as soon as voice goes up, boom, all of the alarms are going off. You're abusive, and like, that's what they think, even though this person might not be abusive, they just might be loud. But all those things pre-thought might be going on too. And then behaviors, or not behaviors, but the biology might actually start to influence the thoughts, if thoughts actually come, and then the cognitive behavioral cycle might start.
So that's I hope that people heard, like, that's interesting. The idea, again, that trauma is stored literally in your body. Mm-hmm. That when you've experienced something, when you experience something that has left an imprint on you, you have a biological response to cues, and you might not even know why. Somebody grabs your arm a certain way, you instantly react before you can even think. So hopefully people are listening like, this is super complicated.
Yeah.
That literally, you have a physiological, neurological response before, quicker than you can have a thought. So if you've experienced abuse and somebody grabbed your arm constantly, and then you're at the store, or you're with somebody and they grab your arm and say, oh, they're trying to pull you out of the way, and you instantly jerk back, and you don't even know where that came from.
Exactly.
So that, again, physiological, that's one of the manifestations that we need, that we're getting at.
Right. And in that case, what might happen for the person, and it doesn't always, I'm using these examples so you can make a better understanding of how quick that could happen, but it doesn't have to be as extreme as that. We have physiological reactions because some of us might be Okay, so we all have our own different, remember, it's the dynamic situation. Mm-hmm. So we all have like a scale of our sensitivity to anxiety and things that produce anxiety. Some of us have more space between the stimulus and response. Some of us have less space. So it might not take much for you to have that reaction. You might already have an easy startle effect, and then something like that happens in your startle effect. The space in between stimulus and response
even
decreases.
Smaller.
So now you're extra sensitive to things.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good point. When I talk to people with who self-proclaim have anger issues, I always try to present with them that you don't have an anger issue because we all get mad. You have a fuse issue. And we need to work to see how can we make your fuse longer. That's right. What that made me think of. So it's like there is this response, this sort of response time or this fuse that we all have. And if let's say you're born with a short fuse and then something happens and makes it even shorter, then pop, you know?
Right.
So that's interesting. And it's an important point for people to know. One, just going back to the idea of physiology and biology, how literally trauma is, or these events can be stored in the body, and you develop all of these, the system, not just your entire body. You're always constantly, again, going back to this idea of trying to protect yourself, even before you can think about protecting yourself. You're trying to always.
Right.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, because how would we survive if we didn't protect ourselves?
Yeah,
you know, it's necessary. And to even understand it further, for those of you who have pets, you could see it in your pets, right? So when my dog, he's about three now, when he was younger, I was going on a trip somewhere and I left him with a collie. And when he came back, I don't think that the collie confused him, y'all. I just like, when he came back though, he was afraid of going out at night. So I think what happened was this collie had a big yard, lots of stuff in the yard, and he went out at night and he had something, you know, encounter with some animal. But the reactions he would have now would be instant. He's out at night, a leaf goes off, boom, automatic action. And you can just see that same thing and imagine that same system working in us as humans. And so when you gave that example of the person who wants to go to Walmart at night, you know, imagine they've had some type of, they might have some PTSD symptoms or something where they have an easy startle effect. But they need to park in a certain part of the parking lot because maybe they're aware of how active their startle effect is, or how much more responsive they are to sudden stimuli.
Yeah.
To the person who doesn't have that, they don't understand it. Just like when I look at my dog who's like overacting to a leaf, it doesn't make any sense to me. But in his little mind, it does.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good stuff. Again, station identification. For those who are just tuning in, Marshall University, WMUL, 88.1 FM. This is Brother to Brother, Dr. Nate Chapman, Dr. Keelan Henson. Again, we are on our series talking about trauma. And today, we're talking about the manifestation of trauma, how trauma manifests itself in our lives. And now we're talking about this idea of they're not just thoughts, but they're behaviors. There's biology, they're reflexes. Their physiological responses and their behaviors. This idea of how trauma can be stored and we can have a physiological response to it. And I wonder how many of you listening who deal with anxiety have stomach issues, have intestinal issues, have gastro issues. And I wonder, is some of the physiological, is it, and I'd like to know, just know your perspective on this, Dr. Chapman, like, is it possible for some of the sicknesses and illnesses and physiological things that we go through on a day-to-day basis, whether it be gas, whether it be stomach problems, whether it be headaches, whether it be migraines, some of this stuff is connected to our mental health in some way? That, again, these things, you know, things manifest when we leave these stones unturned, that the stress from dealing with whatever those issues are, trying to protect ourselves constantly, that stress may manifest itself in some way. What do you think about that idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the research definitely supports that idea. I do think as we think about that, depending on the culture and the group, it can be difficult because sometimes the only acceptable help seems to be medical help. So someone will have a sudden stomach ache or a backache or headache, and it's okay to go see a medical doctor. What's the challenge is about, a challenge about it is sometimes a backache is a backache, and then that are so complicated, it'd be hard to tell whether it's this or something else, and certain populations might be getting dismissed more than they should. That's an aside. Yeah. But it's definitely, the research definitely supports this idea of somatization. And let me just explain briefly or remind people of our fight or flight system and how that works. So basically your parasympathetic system and your sympathetic system are balancing each other out. When something happens, somebody yells at you, you get aggravated, you get anxious, or something traumatic that causes you to feel like you need to flee or fight, that activates that sympathetic system. And it's gonna cause your pupils to open up more. It's gonna cause you to be ready and have all your vital organs ready to kind of go, heart rate goes up. But in addition to that, the unfortunate thing that also happens is your digestive system slows down. And if you're in a chronic state of that, your digestive system will be chronically slowing down. And if it's not working efficiently the way that it needs to work, then you're gonna have those gastrointestinal issues. The other thing is when we're activating that HPA system reducing the cortisol, adrenaline, the hormones related to stress, they're not meant to be constantly released. So constant releasal of these without anything going on in the body, like exercise to get rid of them, causes breakdown in certain parts of your body, and one we know for sure is your defense mechanism. Defense system, the part that, you know, the cells, the blood cells that keep you safe.
Yeah.
The unfortunate thing about them is that those soldiers can never be off guard duty. When they're off, you get sick. And if you're stressed, then less of them are available and you have more likelihood to get sick, which is regular stuff. But also with other stuff, you know, there's research that show support ulcers being there. And even when you think about the research that's linked to type A, the go-getter type. Now, the go-getter type, even if there's not, there might be trauma linking to why they're like a go-getter type or type A, the type of person that has to have things done now. But a side effect of that is they get anxious when they're angry. But anxious and angry activate the same system. Angry when people don't do things when quickly or not, they're not done the right way. Anyways, all those effects chronically are having an impact on your body. You know, high blood pressure, headaches, stomach aches, neurological problems, so on and so forth.
Yeah, yeah. So, again, those that's listening, it's important to think about some of those aches, some of those pains, some of those headaches, some of those gastrointestinal issues. Start to think about other areas of your life. Stress. Are you really stressed out? And could those stomach aches or headaches be a byproduct of that anxiety, that stress, you know, that constant worry? Again, if it's not being dealt with properly, we're just asking. Yeah, I think an important question to ask is, and again, we're not saying go see a psychologist, don't go see your doctor. Go see your primary physician as well. I think, again, as Dr. Chapman said, the system is complicated and all these parts are interrelated and interconnected in some way. So it's like collaborative healthcare is what is needed. Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know what I wanted to add on there is, as I was mentioning earlier, there are plenty of times where medical doctors, and first of all, we're not medical doctors, we're not giving you medical advice. And there could be things that are hard for them to figure out that are legit medical situations. There could be things that are psychosomatic in nature, and then there could be a combination.
Yeah.
Which means that some of the things that have been going on with you psychologically have caused an actual physical problem.
Yeah. And to some degree, we all know that. Like, just think about the last time something bothered you and you said, you know what? I'm done worried about this. And the next day, you just felt like a weight had been lifted. Mm-hmm. And you literally, physically felt better. Yeah. So there may be a, we're just saying that we want people to think about and consider the idea that there may be connections between stress levels, anxiety, depression levels, and physically how you feel. Because like Dr. Tappan said, these feelings and emotions are connected to hormones.
Right. Let me add one more thing that I'm thinking about that. So the other thing, I haven't seen research on it, but I'm curious to see if there's some that do exist. Maybe viewers can share if they're aware of it. But I have a hypothesis. It's kind of anecdotal. I think the other thing where these health things, a possibility is that a person has experienced some type of trauma. They have learned, and in some regard, to put themselves last. They don't necessarily take care of their health. It's not just a psychological thing. It's that things that would need to be done to minimize the health issues are not done. So in some ways, they have habits that are, I guess, self-destructive. You know, the way that they eat, the lack of exercise that they do, that put them at risk, higher risk for these things. And then there's a less likelihood that they would follow up with a medical doctor until they're severe.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. We up on time. And there's something I don't know if. Again, I want us to continue to talk. And maybe this is for the next show. But again, we're talking about all these different parts and pieces and all these different ways with which trauma can manifest itself. What's your perspective on substance use? Is substance use a manifest? And maybe, again, this is something that we need to say for an entire show. But is substance use a manifestation of trauma? Is substance use something that people do to try to come? What say you?
Yeah, we definitely have to dedicate a show to it, but it's what's my favorite word for the day? Complicated. Okay. So definitely we know there's research that supports there's a connection between trauma and substance use. And the idea is that this person might be, we talked about emotional problems, they may have either too much emotions going on that are related to that particular issue, problems regulating those emotions, and the range of substances we can use usually change our mental state. You know, if you drink, that has the ability to numb you a bit. You do cocaine, the ability to give you some euphoria if you're not feeling excitement because maybe you're thinking about the things that you've experienced. And so, they have the ability to either give you the opposite of what you're feeling if you always feel down, or numbing things out if you're always feeling the pain or the full blast of the experience of the trauma. And then I think as people start using, whether they use because of a trauma or they just start using and then develop this use, if they are substance abusers, the likelihood of them experiencing additional traumas is much stronger. You know, depending on the habits you might get into, obviously, There's a whole range of different people that use it. It cuts across all socioeconomic statuses. But when you get to the point where you're doing all those drug-seeking behaviors, you're more likely to be in a situation where you're going to have to commit a crime. You're going to be subject to some type of crisis or trauma that's going to have another imprint on you.
Yeah, yeah. When I think about substance use, always something that I always I say in when I'm doing groups is that people self-medicate. I believe that a lot of times people self-medicate out of pain. And, you know, I always remind people, you're not here. We're not here because we like to drink. We're here because we like to drink excessively. And when there is. I like what you said, the idea of abuse or excessiveness, to me, is where I start to wonder and I start to think about, is there something there that is driving the excessiveness? So it's not that you drink, it's that you drink excessively. And ask yourself, do I drink too much? Do I do too much cocaine? Do I smoke too much? Is the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning, do I have to grab a bowl and hit a bowl before I hit a bowl of cereal? Do I have to hit a bowl of weed? And if I need it to function, you know, if it's excessive in some way, does that speak to some sort of trauma that may be there? What do you think?
I mean, I think that the definitely the research does support that there's a link between trauma. I also think it's nuanced because of the feedback, because of the reinforcement feedback, biological feedback loop of the drug itself.
Yeah.
So people may not be aware that when you get to the point where you have a tolerance of the drug, people are probably aware of what tolerance is. You know, you need more of the same drug to get the same effect. But the reason that it happens in one theory, I think it's called the opponent process theory, and basically it's like an opposite theory. It's like that your brain is trying to adjust to your brain is always trying to adjust to everything you do. So if your brain recognizes, hey, you use a lot of opioids, then when it picks up the clues that you're about to use opioids again, it's gonna bring the brain balance down to a lower level than normal because it knows you use so much, which means you're gonna have to take more to get a high. But your brain is basically just trying to keep you at balance, and it knows that you're using a lot of that stuff lately. So it's gotten used to your habits and it adjusts, and that's why tolerance happens. But that in and of itself is a biological feedback that's outside of the trauma that you might have experienced that caused you to use it in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. As you say, the word of the day is complication. It's complicated. Yeah, let's think about it. Let's wrap. And maybe we can devote, you know, we can continue down this manifestation road, but devote, you know, because substance use, particularly in the area that I'm in, is a very big deal. Maybe we can talk about trauma and its links to substance use, and what are people trying to do when they use substances? Again, are they truly trying to destroy their lives, or are they trying to protect themselves from experiencing or re-experiencing or re-remembering some event or feeling some emotion that's not a happy one? So if I could just get relief and breathe just for a minute when I smoke this, when I snort this, when I drink this, you know, maybe it's just people trying to get relief. I don't know, but I think it's a good conversation worth having.
So. Yeah, there's a lot there. Let's hopefully viewers give us some feedback, their thoughts, and
yeah. For those who are listening, again, we thank you for continuing to support and continuing to listen. Again, those who have questions, comments, or suggestions on anything that they've heard or something that they would like to hear, contact us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. B2bpsych. B2bpsych@gmail.com. Again, we thank you all, wish you all peace and blessings. Well, and Marshall University, as always, for giving us this platform to talk about serious topics, important topics that affect real people and real people's lives, mental health, love, relationships, family, community issues. Like, we really do mean that we don't take this platform for granted. And we appreciate the opportunity just to share what we know. Again, as we always tell you, we don't know everything. We're just two brothers and two men and two professionals who are seeking answers and who are here literally on air live trying to talk it through and trying to talk it out. And hopefully we'll inspire some people to do research. Again, anything that we say, research it. Don't just take anything we say as the gold standard. Again, go and research it, and it puts us in action. And become better at our crafts and just become better men, better family members, and better pillars for our community. So we thank you all. As I always say, you know, graveyards are full of regret and potential. Make sure that when you die, you take nothing with you. Make sure the people that in your life that you love, make sure they know that you love them. And make sure that you're doing something that sets your soul on fire and that inspires you. Peace and blessings to you all who are listening. Thank you for continuing to listen. And Dr. Chapman will take us out as always.
Yeah, we appreciate your ear. Hope that you were able to take something away from the day. I know sometimes I don't think that we ever really talk about our social media platforms, but feel free to follow us on social media. At least myself, I think that Dr. Hinton's okay with it too. So that would be Keelan Hinton on Facebook. And then that's Nathaniel Chapman on Facebook. You could also check out my website if you like. It's Chapman Training and Consulting .com. What I want you to take away from today is trauma and thinking about the first steps of manifestation we talked about. One, it's complicated. Remember that the people in your life, or if you're dealing with this on your own, that complication is important for you to consider. It's not just the trauma, it's the dynamic interaction between the person and the trauma that's going to determine how it imprints their life and how it shows up in life. And a lot of times when we're working with people in our life that has had trauma, we might lose the ability to be empathetic or really understand where this person is coming from, what they're going through, because we disagree with whatever the outcomes are. Every outcome, I think one of the points that were being illustrated by Dr. Hinton is every outcome has a purpose, most likely. And if we can take the time to get to know this person, the dynamic, and what's the purpose under it, maybe if we can get to that, that will help us out overall. The two big things in terms of manifestation, I think what we've illustrated today have to do with emotional reactions. You know, the range of emotions, sadness, fear, anger, irritability, the inability to express those emotions or regulate those emotions. Rather, that's because you avoid them, you push them away, you use a substance of some sort. And then talking about how these things show up in our physical. Remember, it's not always cut and dry, not always easy. You might know some people who have lots of physical ailments. It's possible for there to be something that is solely psychosomatic, that means just physical or just a physical manifestation of a psychological situation. It's also possible for it to be a physical situation that is amplified or increased because of a psychological situation. So if we could just maybe have a little bit more mercy on people, try to understand their story, not think so much about fixing people, but just trying to see where they're at. And remembering that, in my experience, the most important thing a person that's been traumatized needs is someone that is willing to sit with them in their trauma and validate their experience. So if you could just be a little validating this week, maybe that'll be helpful to yourself. That includes validating yourself and validate and helpful to others on your journey. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.
You can tell everybody, yeah, you can tell everybody, go ahead and tell everybody, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man, yes I am, yes I am, yes I am, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
WMUL-FM, Huntington.